Live and Lansing with Michael Cohen. This is More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
And we're back. Michael Cohen with producer Desi Simmons. We'll talk about the medical marijuana situation here in Lansing tomorrow. But now, Michigan governors usually avoid declaring their support for any particular candidate from their party during the primaries. But Governor Snyder did just that today, saying that he's backing former U.S. Congressman Pete Hoekstra for the Republican senatorial nomination in the upcoming race against Democratic Senator Debbie Stabenow. To talk about what that will mean for his campaign, Congressman Hoekstra joins me now. Welcome to the program.
Hey, good to be with you. Thank you.
Now, the governor came out relatively early in this race to give you his support. Is this a response to the endorsement that your challenger, Clark Durant, received from three former heads of the Michigan Republican Party, including Spencer Abrams, who lost his Senate seat to Stabenow?
I'm not sure exactly what that timing had to do with it. I mean, we've had a number of endorsements over the last few months, everything from, you know, candidate for governor Mike Bouchard, former Secretary of State Terry Lynn Land. We've had a number of people in the congressional delegation, Bill Huizenga, Justin Amash, endorse me. And so, but I think Rick just wanted to get his voice in and let the people of Michigan know and the people in the Republican Party know that, as he said today, he thought I was the best candidate for the U.S. Senate, that I had the background, the experience to do a great job in the Senate, and to also, run a successful campaign and beat Debbie Stabenow.
You're the presumed front runner in the race, and Clark Durant is apparently your main challenger. When you see a split like this among state Republican leaders between yourself and Durant, does this represent any real differences on the issues, or is it just a matter of personal relationships?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously that stuff will shake out over the coming months as to exactly what the differences in substance and style and experience and background, you know, what those differences are. Clark hasn't formally announced. He's made clear indication that he intends to get in the race, but has not made public a formal announcement that whether he is or is not going in to be in the race. We'll see what happens there. But right now, we've just got to run the race that we want to run. We're focused on, you know, putting together the team that, sure, is going to be successful in August of 2012, but more importantly, we're putting together the foundation, the teamwork, and the financial resources to make sure that we can be successful in November of 2012.
With the economy being the central issue, and the Republican position is simply no tax increases and deficit reduction, what really distinguishes you or Mr. Durant from any other Republican in the race when it comes to your position on this issue?
Well, I think when you really take a look at you know, some of the policies that I've advocated for, my experience and background. Number one, I came out of the business world. I think this is one of the things that, you know, really enable Rick and I to have a very good relationship. We both have extensive experience in the private sector, and, you know, I've had the opportunity to bring that experience to government. But, you know, as we take a look at, you know, many of the policies that need to take, this is not just about more or less taxes. I mean, mm-hmm. You take a look at this governor is reinventing Michigan. We're going to have to reinvent Washington. We need a new tax code. Everybody is in agreement that this tax code needs to go. It has way too many favors built into it. And so we're going to be able to shape a new tax code. Everybody knows that the entitlement programs are going to have to be reformed and reworked to make sure that they are going to be there for our kids. And that they're not an anchor to our kids' economic futures. And so reworking Social Security and Medicare are absolutely a huge opportunity. And finally, you know, re-implementing states' rights. The governor and I are in agreement that we need to bring the control of education back to Michigan, take it out of Washington, D.C., road construction. We ought to leave 100% of Michigan's gas tax revenues that are collected in Michigan ought to stay in Michigan. We shouldn't be satisfied with 93 cents coming back with a bunch of rules and regulations. And finally, we ought to move Medicaid, the control for health care for low-income folks. We ought to move that back to the states. Get more money being invested in delivering the kinds of results that we want rather than bureaucracy.
Oh, we move Medicare back to the states, you said?
No, Medicaid.
Oh, Medicaid back to the states. Now, Medicaid. Although the states are essentially broke at this point. Is that something that
you move the money back with it. The great example here is whether it's Medicaid, whether it's roads, or whether it's education. I spent a lot of time on education reform in Washington. You take a look at, a Washington education dollar that comes back to the states, about 30 to 40 cents of that gets eaten up in bureaucracy. If you get rid of the rules and regulations, you take the money back to the states, 100% of that money could end up going into a classroom where actually all the testing would tell you that's where money can have an impact, not in bureaucracy. Get the money in the classroom.
I'm talking to former U.S. Congressman Pete Hoekstra. He's currently a Republican senatorial candidate. He will be likely, if he does win the nomination, facing Democratic Senator Debbie Stabenow. You know, there is an argument when it comes to the way government is run that it really can't be compared properly to that of a business or a person in the way the finances are handled because of the enormous responsibility governments have, not only for the welfare of individuals, but for trying to help boost the economy when things are especially bad. Do you really think that there's an absolute direct correlation between running a business and running the government?
Oh, no, they're very, very two different organizations and entities. No, I agree with that 100%. Government is very, very different than business. But what you can do, and I found that in my time in Congress, you can take business principles, how you conduct a business, how you run a business, clarity of responsibility, clarity of accountability. These are principles you should apply to government. When I was in Washington, I pressed for, I think it took 4 or 5 years, before the Department of Education, a department that at that time was spending about $50 billion a year, before they could get a clean audit. An audit only tells you, it doesn't tell you whether the money that's being spent is actually having an impact, a positive or a negative impact. An audit just tells you, hey, we really know how much money we're spending in each of the areas, and we can kind of track money as it goes through our agency. You can't even audit many of the departments in Washington. That's just a sound business principle that ought to be applied to government.
Michigan is a very good example of the pressure that's building on those at the bottom. We have a jobless rate that's over 10%. Unemployment benefits are now going to be down to 20 weeks. Welfare now has a strict limit. Isn't it likely that there are now tens of thousands of Michiganians who can't find jobs right now and have nowhere left to turn?
There are more than tens of thousands of Michiganians who can't find jobs and who can't find opportunity in this state. And that's why, Governor Snyder and the legislature, they're doing everything that they can to create an environment where people will invest in Michigan and where they will begin creating those jobs. And what Rick's looking for, and what I think what the people of Michigan are looking for, is the same kind of reinvention in Washington that we're seeing at the state level, so we can create those opportunities. We did this before. We did this in the 1990s. In that case, we did Republican Congress and a Democrat president, Bill Clinton. We reformed government. We restrained spending. And we reduced taxes, and we grew the economy, we grew opportunity, we grew jobs, and we balanced the budget.
I'm talking to former U.S. Congressman Pete Hoekstra, now running for the U.S. Senate. Let me see. Now, we all know jobs are the number one concern for every political leader at this point, but what would you say is the second most pressing concern this country is facing?
Well, I think the second most pressing, my experience on the Intelligence Committee, national security, I do believe that the threats from abroad still are a major something that we should have a major concern about. The third thing is we have to get the deficit and the debt under control. We might be able to see a short upturn in jobs and the economy, but if we don't get the deficit and the debt under control, long-term prosperity will be threatened.
Well, I do want to ask you about the polls that found the voters were actually disapproved of both the president and Republican congressionals. But first, I wonder, with the situation in Libya and this Arab Spring that's occurring in the Middle East, is there really anything the U.S. can do at this point other than stand back and watch and hope that the result of all this revolution isn't a negative one for us?
It's very, very difficult for us to have much influence over this at this point at all. Much of what happened in the Arab Spring happened. We didn't anticipate it. We may have sown some of the seeds for it, but we didn't anticipate it. We need to be a strong voice for democracy, representative government, and those types of things. But the exact impact that we have at this time, I think your assessment is right. I think our direct impact and indirect impact is going to be very, very limited.
And what does it really mean when we see these revolutionary groups where there's not, at least from what we can see, a clear, strong leader in these countries? Is that going to mean a real problem for our own national security?
I think so. I think when you have weak governments throughout the Middle East, whether you liked it or not, you had a strong government with Gaddafi, you had a strong government with Mubarak, and these types of things. But when the ruling structure, the governing structure in Egypt breaks down, you create the potential for real turmoil, unrest. That is a breeding ground for radicals. That is a breeding ground for people who may wish to attack the U.S. or U.S. interest. I mean, the ultimate breakdown of government, of course, are the things that you see in places like Somalia and Yemen. The rule of law, there's something to be said to have the rule of law in place, even if you don't necessarily like the government and the rulers that are in place.
Now, finally, the deficit ceiling, the debate, polls found voters were very unhappy with how that went down, both congressional Republicans and the president also. If you had been in the Senate and if you were involved in this debate, would you take a more moderate approach and try more actively to find compromise with President Obama and the Democrats?
Well, I think, compromise is a two-way street. I mean, I've worked with Democrats very effectively when we did intelligence reform after the 9/11 attacks. I worked with Joe Lieberman, Susan Collins, and Jane Harman. And what we did is we put our nose to the ground, the grindstone. We worked hard. We had the national interest in mind. None of us sold out on principle. But at the end of that process, we were able to get a 9/11 intelligence reform bill complete. It wasn't perfect. But the results have not been bad. We've not been attacked on the homeland other than with the lone wolf phenomena since 9/11. So there is a measure of success there. And like I said, we did that because we were committed to getting something done. We committed ourselves to each other to do it in a constructive and positive way, and we committed to allow each of our that we would respect each of our philosophical differences, and we never required any of us to sell out on principle. Right. We got done what we needed to get done.
But in a case like this, is there any way to actually find a middle ground when both sides have such entrenched principles, especially when you look at groups like the Tea Party?
Oh, I think so. I think that there is a way to find common ground, but what you can't do is you can't fight like crazy for 6 or 9 months and then get to the debt ceiling crisis and all of a sudden say, okay, guys, now let's work together. You've got to build those relationships up front so that when you get to a very difficult problem, you will find a way to work through it. What happened with the debt ceiling is you had people that had not had the experience of working together and getting some things done that laid the foundation for them to get more things done and to handle the really tough problems. You can't just start with something as tough as the debt ceiling and say, okay, hey, let's all work together on this issue. I think it's one of the reasons that the people on the debt commission or this new debt commission are going to have trouble working together because, I hope they're successful. I hope they come up with some really innovative solutions that everybody says, hey, why wasn't this worked on, or why weren't these possible solutions identified earlier? I think it's going to be hard. They don't have much time, and they don't have an experience these 12 people don't have the experience of working together.
It sounds like we need to deploy some mediators to Washington, D.C. at this point. Former U.S. Congressman Pete Hoekstra, now running for the U.S. Senate seat being held by Democratic Senator Debbie Stabenow. Thank you very much for joining me.
Hey, great. Thanks for allowing me on. Have a great night.
Thank you. You too.